It's good for the soul. We weren't here on time. Please don't ask me how late, but we sat down very quietly and in the back, and so we did our best, or I did my best. I haven't seen all of you in quite a while. A lot has happened. We've had a Feast of Tabernacles, and I saw a few of you there. And we had a grandbaby. We had a little girl. Saw her last night. We call her, or they call her Emma. And so she's just the light of our children's life and ours as well. You've had a Kingdom of God seminar. We've been to Ohio just ahead of that, or just behind or around Storm Sandy. And we have a dance. So I want to invite y'all to the country time dance. It is. Somebody asked if it was a lemonade dance. No, it is not a country time lemonade dance. It's a country theme dance. So, as Mr. Smith said, please, y'all bring your boots, bring your hat, bring the appropriate attire, and you will have a good time. So, we were thinking of what type of theme to have, and the ladies that are putting it together, one in particular, comes from Texas, so we know that it'll be themed properly, but we wanted to have it a little bit earlier, and we said if we have it earlier, it's going to be near Halloween, and I said, who cares if it's near Halloween? So we moved it away from Halloween, then we started getting it toward Thanksgiving, but be that as it may, it's on a Sunday, almost in the middle of the day, so please, if you have a hankering, please, y'all come up and be with us. Now, I wanted to comment on the Helmuth 60th. 60 years together? With each other? Continuously? To the same person? Aren't you afraid of getting in a rut? Well, I can, no, in all seriousness, that is amazing. Congratulations to you. So, that's quite an accomplishment. Now, you were married before I was born. Wow, that's excellent. Oh, and I almost forgot, we also had an election. Is everybody like I am and just plain glad it's over? Oh, I'll tell you what is very odd, was we went back to see Becky's parents' 60th wedding anniversary as well in Ohio, just east of Columbus. And I must tell you, out in California, we had no political advertising. And about the last thing I want to do, and we're going to talk about this relative to the Sabbath, when we went back to Ohio with the in-laws, every TV commercial, the phone rang nonstop in their home, political ad after political ad, unbelievable. My father-in-law said, well, I know you don't want to listen to that. And I said, no, stop. I haven't seen any political ads. So he says, we've seen them nonstop for a month. And I said, that's because you can't make up your mind here in Ohio, and the rest of us in the country are sick and tired of hearing about Ohio. Would you make up your mind? Right? So we saw all posters, signs everywhere. Oh, it was sad. But anyway, we got back. Becky just returned, and I made it just before Sandy, and I know your prayers and thoughts. We used to live in New Jersey for about 10 years, and the devastation there is absolutely horrific. I want you to think of the ocean where we have the feast, the Oceanside, Carlsbad area, gone, wiped out. They've lost 5% of their landmass in New Jersey. So it is it's just beyond tragic, and it's not over yet in New York, as you know. So I know our prayers go out to the people in general and the church people in particular. Today what I'd like to talk to you about is a type of repetitive action that we do in our lives. We have habits. We have good habits and we have bad habits. So I'm talking about even good habits. But sometimes the things that we do over and over and over and over again become so ingrained, they become so automatic, they become so second nature, we almost don't think about them. They are truly robotic. We do them the same way, all the time, every time, almost without thinking. Sometimes, as time goes by with these repetitive actions or habits, there's no depth to them. We don't think about them. We move from the same action to the same action over and over again, and we say to ourselves, after it's happened, What just happened? Did I do it? Didn't I just do this again? And we don't even think about it. Where nearly 40 years ago, I learned about an idea that was very, very new to me, unbelievably foreign, untried, untested, and unproven. At the time, I lived with my dad, and we had a neighbor down the street. Now, they were very, very religious. We were not. My folks never, ever went to church, except when there was a funeral. We didn't go to weddings, because there wasn't any. Everybody was dying. Nobody got married. So I'd show up for a funeral. All I remember is a series of funerals. And because my father was 50 when he had me, by the time I was in my 20s, if you do the math, he was in his 70s, everybody he knew was dying. So when I went to church, it was for a funeral. But we never went to church. But this neighbor invited me to his church down the street. My dad wasn't real wild about it. So I went anyway. It was a Protestant denomination. They were very wonderful people. It was great. Every Sunday, we would meet for services in the morning. We'd have lunch or maybe dinner together, and we'd have services in the afternoon and evening. I joined the choir. We even toured with the choir over a number of years. And for years, on Sunday evenings, I would wave to my dad and say, "Bye, Dad. Are you going to church again?" "Yeah, we're going to church, Dad." "That's right." I was going morning and evening. I'd say, "Bye, Dad." And every once in a while, he'd stop me and say, "Come here, I want you to stop for a minute and sit down." It was Sunday night in the Los Angeles area, and I want you to listen to somebody. And I said, "Don't have time, Dad, going to church." "Well, you'll want to hear this guy." And I said, "That's okay, Dad, I'm going to church." And so I blew it off for quite a few months. And of course, he was listening to Gabner Fed Hamstrung, Garner Ted Armstrong. So one time I just felt bad, I guess out of respect for my father, or I thought he was just going to completely wear me out and wear me down. So I stopped, I sat down, and I listened. And at that program, he said, "If you're going to church on Sunday," and I was, twice on Sunday, "it's the wrong day." And I said, "Huh? Huh?" And so I watched, and I basically had my jaw hit the floor. I was so angry that this guy could be so arrogantly wrong about everything. But I listened nonetheless. Not too long after I started listening, I was still going back to the Protestant church. I had an accident. It was fairly serious. And I wanted to find out more. So there were these booklets that they were offering. So I went up, and I went up to the campus. My dad drove me for these booklets. One was The Real Jesus. The other was What is the Christian Sabbath? And many of you would have remembered those booklets, or in some form or another, I guess we still have them. But I read those booklets, and I listened for basically the next 40 years. And to me, it was so very, very clear. So very clear. Saturday was the day that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that Moses and that Jesus and the early church observed. It was so very clear when I read my Bible. He was right, that guy on the TV. He was right. And it took me to be stopped in my tracks, bolt upright, to even stop and listen. I said to myself, how could all these people be so wrong? Well-meaning, I had gone back to my pastor at the time, and I asked him, I said, what is this? Why do we worship on Sunday when the Bible is very clear that Jesus worshiped on a Saturday? And he said, well, John, it's a very eclectic understanding. And it went downhill from there. And I looked at him, very nice man. I remember him to this day like I'm talking to you. And I thought, he is full of wrong. And I said, thank you very much. And I promptly turned around and started worshiping on Saturday. So every Sabbath, I would put on my coat and my tie, and I'd trundle off to services up in Pasadena area. First to the San Marino Church, San Marino Women's Club. Anybody even remember the San Marino Women's Club? A few of you do. I remember going there, and I said, why are there just old people here? There was nothing but, yeah, I know, gray hair. I said, this is a church of old people. Then San Marino folded into the Imperial Gym, And there were younger people there. There was lots of people. In fact, hundreds of people there. It was wonderful. And I went to Auditorium AM and PM. I was a very, very righteous individual. I went to two services every Sabbath, every week. Some 2,000 Sabbaths, I guess by my count now. The problem with that is it became very habit. Saturday, Sabbath meant going to church. Every Sabbath. Not some Sabbaths, not most Sabbaths, every Sabbath. That's a good thing. The bad thing is it became rote. It became ingrained. It became repetitive. Recently, a few months ago, on Friday nights, we try to get together with the family. And with as children get older, and they're no longer children, they're adults, they have their own lives, but we all try as best as we can to everybody get together. And we did, may God be thanked, last night. And most Sabbaths, Friday nights, we're together. And during the Friday night dinners, Becky goes to great lengths. She doesn't orchestrate it, but she does conduct a very nice Friday night dinner. And we have candles, and there's the food, of course, and the kiddos, and now we have a little kiddo. And it's a very special time. So there I was, and it dawned on me. I looked around, I said, I'm at home. It's Friday night. There's relatively peace. I'm not supposed to be thinking about work and the rotten week that I'd had, and I don't. And I haven't, and I shouldn't. And I'm resting, and I'm reflecting. There are no reports to write tomorrow. There may be a message to prepare. There are no phone calls, at least not for business. And I won't answer my phone on the Sabbath if I don't know what the number is. And I sat there and thought about how many times I've done this. How many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times I had been in this position. The next day, as we are now, we're in services in Eagle Rock. And occasionally what I'll do, and if you've been to Eagle Rock, it's got very high ceilings as you have here, and it's a very peaceful place. And I looked around at the people that I met with, I listened to the music, I did listen to the messages, and I said, all these years, thousands of times I've sat in services on the Sabbath. Have I indeed, I said, taken this for granted? Because as you get older, it's harder and harder to remember what something was like, what it was before. So I said, all these years, have I taken it for granted? Have I just gone through the motions and not truly appreciated this wonderful gift of truth that I have, that we have, of its meaning and of its purpose? And whereas I can't and shouldn't and won't answer that question for you, I did answer it for me. And today what I'd like to discuss with you is three aspects of the Sabbath that is enjoined upon us. The title is 2,000 Sabbaths, the joy of the Sabbath. It's not so much theological, but practical. These are practical perspectives that I'd like to share with you. And if you're new to our fellowship, the elders here, as we do in Eagle Rock, can assist you in the biblical reasons. I will not go over the biblical reasons, which we will only touch on here, but the depth can be done at a later time with the men that are here to assist you. But again, many times when people speak, and I know the speakers know this, as Mr. Young did, we speak first to ourselves. When you speak on prayer, you speak to yourself. So when you hear someone speak, 9 times out of 10, the speaker is kind of pulling back the curtain on things they're thinking about, issues that they deal with, that they feel may be a benefit to others. So these three aspects that I wish to cover, the first aspect will be the most obvious, and that will be rest. This church teaches a biblical seventh-day Sabbath as a memorial of creation, as one of its foundational concepts of understanding. Again, it is a seventh-day Sabbath as a memorial of creation. Turn with me, if you would, to the book of Exodus. Not Genesis, because Genesis, again, the theological underpinning of this day, but I want to turn to Exodus, where the law is being given. Now, Exodus chapter 20, we know very, very well. In fact, we have, as you may have, a plaque in our home with all the commandments. And I was thinking about this as well. That plaque has been on that wall for at least 20 years. Do I ever look at it? No, not really. On occasion. But the Ten Commandments are there. What's interesting, when I look at now that plaque, and I read, as we do, the eighth verse is one of the most interesting verses and commandments. And we're going to look at it, I hope, in a maybe a slightly different way. So Exodus chapter 20 in verse 8. It is four verses long. If you want to do a quick check, you can tell just on by eye that this is, if not one of the most, it is the longest of the commandments in its detail. It's very simple. Remember the Sabbath day, verse 8, chapter 20. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Eternal your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Eternal made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Eternal blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. I say this is one of the most personal because, as we've just read it, I want you to look at there are two in particular near opposing forces here. There's two things in contrast here. One is God's action of rest, that He rested after creation and then hallowed the day. That's one force. The other is our propensity to not maintain that holiness, because He does use the word remember. The Sabbath day, and remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, because our propensity is not to keep it holy, else He would not give the commandment. He did not give the commandment that the seventh day is the Sabbath and you shall rest in it. He tells us to remember the day. The implication is when you have to be told to remember something, right? I remember my mother. She said it half in jest, half serious. She said, when you go out in public, always, complete the phrase for me, if you will. Yeah, a couple of you are already nodding. Always remember, honey, to wear clean underwear. We obviously are all related because we all had the same mother. Right? And I remember asking her why, and she'd say, well, in case you get in an accident. You see, we are all related. Brothers, sisters, I need $20. Who here, brother, and says, no, I'm kidding. But it's true. Always remember because, especially with boys, right? Why would a mother say to a boy, honey, make sure you've got clean underwear on? Because boys don't bathe regularly and they don't have on clean undergarments all the time. We forget. It's one of the things men do very, very well. We forget. Women, I think, have four brains in their head, and they've got these locks and keys, and she remembers things. I don't remember what I did yesterday, let alone 3 or 4 months ago. So, guys, in many ways, this is talking to us. To remember, you're going to forget, and you're going to forget to keep it holy. Now, how do we not keep the Sabbath holy? He goes into some great detail. Notice the repetitive personal pronouns. And indeed, he's speaking to everyone, not just men, but men and women, everyone. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath. Here's this juxtaposition of the Eternal your God. You have your work, and here's the Sabbath. They're put in, not opposition, but in contrast to one another. In it, you shall do no work. You, again, as if it wasn't clear the first three times, you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within the gates, your gates. And the reason is, for in 6 days the Eternal made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. And He rested the seventh day. And because of that, therefore, the Eternal blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. And so will you. Not only you, but you. Not only you, but your son and your daughter and your maidservants and your female, male and female servants. The cattle aren't to work. The cattle aren't to work. The stranger who is among you. Now, you have to figure that one, how it applies to the Sabbath. I think you'll come to some interesting conclusions there. It's very personal. He's talking about your life. The things that you have control over are the things that are around you. No one is to work that is around you. And again, these are put in juxtaposition to God's actions. God rests, you rest. And everybody around you will rest. Everything around you will rest. Even the cattle, the horses, the animals are going to rest. Nothing will work for you. And again, we look at this and we say, why? Because the tendency is to forget. It's to forget in an aspect. If you look at this verse, it really encompasses many different aspects of you, your children, your male servant, your cattle. I don't have male or female servants. I guess somebody did at that point. The strangers who are within your gates. None of them are supposed to work, and you're to remember that. And you're not to forget. And you're not to forget what? You're not to forget its holiness, its hallowedness. So it enumerates a long list. Why? Because it is a day of remembrance and of rest. That God is the Creator, and He created everything that we see. Everything that we see. Do you know we can estimate numerically what God sees and what we see? And I would venture to put to you that we see 1/1,000,000 of 1% of what God sees. God sees millions and millions of times more than we see. And so when He is the Creator of this earth, just this earth, He created a Sabbath. So 6 days of work delineate the work that we do from the rest of the Sabbath. It creates a boundary. It creates a different day, a different period of time. So God marks off time. In fact, it's numerically almost a tithe and a half of your time during the week. If you have 7 days in a week, right, 1/7 would be approximately 14 1/2%. 14 1/2% is a tithe and a half, roughly. So God doesn't ask for a tithe of your time every week. He asks for a tithe and a half of your time. That is how important. So this day, this boundary is different. I'm going to quote from a couple of books. One in particular is, many of you are familiar with Samuel Bakayoko, who died not too long ago, but was a great defender of the Sabbath, and in fact came to the aid of the church when we needed a little bit of clarification to our enemies on the Sabbath, and he did a masterful job. So he was indeed a good friend. He says that the Sabbath rest gives wisdom to distinguish between the lesser and the greater, between the common and the holy. As God, by resting on the seventh day, separated this day from the previous 6 days, making it the day of His holy presence, so the believer, by resting on the Sabbath, draws a clear-cut boundary line between this day and his working days. The drawing of this dividing line between work and rest, between working time and holy time, the basis of the sanctification of the Sabbath. This day is considered holy time. It's separated. When you were baptized, you were separated. You were made holy. You were sanctified. So exactly like this day of rest, as we are, it is indeed something very different. This delineation of time is also of space and of presence. When we see the sunset, and as the year goes through its cycle of the sun and the moon, as we see the sunset earlier and earlier, we know that we have to prepare for the Sabbath. I try, and if I can, get home early on Friday, and I will try and get the lawn front and back mowed. I noticed yesterday that somebody had changed the setting of the sun because I had to push that mower. I said, why is it so low? So I had to move a little faster to get things done and to prepare for the Sabbath. And when we do that, we leave the world utterly behind, don't we? Or we should. Because holy has no place with unholy. And as much as we may enjoy the careers or the jobs that we have, we leave the world and its competitive nature, its illusions and delusions behind. Our speech is different on the Sabbath day. Our thoughts are different and move to calm on the Sabbath day. It is a completely and utterly different day. It's a zone, as it were, of peace. And it has these incredible concepts of rest. Mankind does not like to rest. We like to move. Rest means lazy. Rest means non-productive. But today it's different because it pictures so many different things. Turn with me, if you would, to the New Testament in the book of Hebrews. Now, we're not quite sure who wrote the book of Hebrews. Some believe that it is Paul, and we're going to see one of those chapters, and we're going to move to chapter 3 of Hebrews, 3 and 4. And chapters 3 and 4 are one of the reasons many people think that this is written by Paul, because of the contrasts that are given. Paul does this often. He plays on words. He uses one word and then changes the meaning of the word to a Greek mind. Greeks had 5, 6, 7 words, a la the word love. They have 5 or 6 different words. We have to explain the kind of love that we talk about. Greek didn't have that issue. It was a much more nuanced language. And so this section, if you'll read with me in chapter 3 and beginning in verse 15, he says, verse 15, he says, "While it is said, today if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion." Now, this is, this is taken from Psalm 95. "Today if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion." Now, Mr. Young referenced the rebellion. The rebellion he's talking about, as we'll see, is in the wilderness. The Israelites were wandering and they rebelled about going into the promised land. So don't harden your hearts. Today, if you'll hear his voice, don't harden your hearts as in the rebellion. Verse 16, "For who, having heard, rebelled? Indeed, was it not all who came out of Egypt led by Moses? Now, with whom was he angry 40 years? Was it not with those who sinned, whose corpses fell in the wilderness? And to whom did he swear that they would not enter? They would never enter his rest, but to those who did not obey. So see, we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief and the hardening of their heart." Now, the words that he uses here are very important. And we're going to see that the typical word for rest in the New Testament, it's a very interesting word, and he uses it over and over again, is katapausen. And he's going to use this again and again in these two chapters that we're going to read. But he changes it very interestingly. Verse 1, chapter 4. Remember, there's no page or chapter breaks in the original Greek. "Therefore, since a promise remains," it still remains, "of entering his rest, let us fear lest any of you seem to have come short of it. For indeed, the gospel was preached to us as well as to them." So he makes this connection between Israel and today, or when this book was written, and for us as we read it now, "was preached to us as well as to them, but the word which they heard did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in those who heard it. For we who have believed do enter that rest, as that he has said, 'So I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest,' although the works were finished from the foundation of the world. For he has spoken in a certain place of the seventh day in this way, 'And God rested on the seventh day from all his works,' and again in this place, 'They shall not enter my rest.' Since therefore remains that some must enter it, and those to whom it was first preached did not enter it because of disobedience, again he designates a certain day, saying in David, 'Today, after such a long time, it has been said, today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts.' For if Joshua had given them rest, then he would have not afterwards spoken of another day. There remains therefore a rest for the people of God. For he who has entered his rest has himself also ceased from his works as God did from his. Let us therefore," verse 11, "be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall according to the same example of disobedience." Now there's a lot there. There's a lot there. And hopefully you followed through as he moved from ancient Israel up to David's time, up to his own time, and we read it now in our time. So in many ways for us, there's four different epochs or four different situations where these verses can apply. What's interesting here is that he talks about these two concepts in particular. One, Israel going into the promised land, which was a type of rest. They did not through disobedience. And us entering into God's rest, because it remains the people of God to enter a rest, as Jesus Christ promises. And that is the import of this chapter. But the nexus is the center point, the fulcrum, is the seventh day Sabbath as commanded by God. For he says in verse 8, "For if Joshua had given them rest in the promised land, then he would not have afterwards spoken of another day, as David did." Verse 9, "There remains therefore a rest for the people of God." When we see this word over and over again. We see the word rest. It's the word katapausen. But in verse 9, "There therefore remains a rest for the people of God." It is the word sabbatismos. It is a completely and utterly different word. The New International Version translates it, "There remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God." The New Living Translation, "So there is a special rest still waiting for the people of God." The English Standard Version says, "So then there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God." And the New American Standard, "So there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God." The sabbatismos in verse 9 there means the keeping of a Sabbath. It is a very, very unique word, used very, very rarely. Mainly here, and in some cases, Judaic literature written in the Greek language. So sabbatismos is changed. We have it as the word rest, the keeping of a Sabbath. The keeping of a Sabbath. "There remains, therefore, the keeping of a Sabbath to the people of God." That is what we are doing here. And it's important, because when we remove ourselves and enter this time of rest, we enter almost a type of time that God and Jesus Christ inhabit. When we memorialize this day, because this day, this idea of a rest goes back into antiquity. So I ask you and I encourage you to also to reflect. How do I honor the Sabbath by truly resting? And those around me are allowed to rest. Not only us resting and reflecting, but those around us are also allowed. We try not to have large meals on the Sabbath because poor Becky is an infinitely better cook than I am. If I were to cook on the Sabbath, I would enforce these types of laws about no cooking whatsoever, right, on the Sabbath. But I don't cook, so we try and make sure that she does as little as possible because it detracts from her Sabbath. It retracts from a lot of people's Sabbath. And so I ask you and encourage you as I do to reflect on how do I honor the Sabbath as the keeping of rest. The second aspect is one of redemption. And it flows very easily, as we can see, to Hebrews chapter 4, where we'll return again. Chapter 4 and verse 3. We'll read it now with a little bit more intent, because there are important redemptive concepts here, and they form this continuum of the different millennia. The idea of this redemptive as Sabbath as redemption, being redeemed about the Sabbath, goes all the way back to Israel and on into our day. Verse 3, "For we who have believed to enter that rest," who is the author talking to? He's talking to the people to whom the book of Hebrews was addressed. "For we who have believed," who else could he be speaking to? He could be speaking to those Christians down through the centuries and to us today. We are those that believed. I've always found it interesting that we who believed are here on the Sabbath, not simply, but it's very important, obviously, that God commands us to be here on the Sabbath. But if that is the only reason we do it is the book of Exodus, then we would call ourselves Jews. But we're not Jews. We believe in the Messiah. So we who have believed what God has said both in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, we enter that rest as well. He says, "For it is said, For I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. And again, that's Psalm 95 by David. Although the works were finished from the foundation of the world, in other words, the Sabbath was created, the foundation of the world, the creation of the world, for he has spoken in a certain place, the seventh day, that original Sabbath, in this way. And God rested on the seventh day from all his works, and again in this place, they shall not enter my rest. Again, the word over and over again, when you see the word rest, is the word katapausen. So, verse 3, we who have entered that rest is the dwelling of Canaan. God rested, a physical rest at creation, the Sabbath. And then verse 5, he says, my rest, same word again. And then verse 7, skip with me there if you would. Again, he designates a certain day, saying in David, again, Psalm 95, today, after such a long time, it has been said, today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. So it's being said to us again, today, as it was during the time of the book of Hebrews. Do not harden your hearts. Listen to his voice. For Joshua had given them rest, he would have not afterwards spoken of another day. There remains, therefore, the keeping of a Sabbath for the people of God, in verse 9. Verse 10 and 11, he says, for he who has entered his rest, the his is God and Christ's rest, has himself also ceased from his works as God did from his. Let us, verse 11, therefore be diligent to enter that rest. He's speaking now of the rest that God gives, the peace that God gives now, evidenced by the seventh-day Sabbath, lest anyone fall according to the same example of disobedience, speaking of Israel. For the word of God is living and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the division of soul and spirit, and of joints and marrow, and a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. It goes on in verse 14, to seeing then that we have a great high priest, speaking of Jesus, who has passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. And it goes on about the attributes of the high priest. So this rest that he's talking about is the rest that we enjoy because we have been redeemed. Ancient Israel was being redeemed from Egypt to go into the promised land. That was the objective. The objective was not to wander for 40 years. The objective was to move right from Egypt straight into Canaan, the land that God had prepared. That did not happen. God therefore says in the book of Hebrews that we are to enter that rest. Now, we cannot enter Canaan. Canaan does not exist as it once did. And so the rest that he is talking about is this rest in the believing of what we understand, and that we are redeemed from that salvation act by Jesus Christ. And I invite you to read all of Hebrews chapter 3 and 4 for a complete understanding of that. And so there's three levels of redemptive concepts of the Sabbath. There is the creation week where God redeemed the earth. He recreated it. He reclaimed it so it could be used. We have no idea. We speculate all day long what God did on the week of creation. We have no clue. We speculate. But it wasn't the Garden of Eden. God redeemed the Garden of Eden, the earth. So he redeems the planet, he creates, and he rests. There's the promise of a physical rest as Israel's redemption entered his rest in Canaan. And today we have a physical rest, don't we? We don't work today. We don't do what we do 6 days a week. And then there's the promise of rest with Christ's redemption to us spiritually now. It is another rest. He speaks of another rest. And we know that it finalizes itself in the kingdom of God. This concept of the Sabbath and redemption is evidenced in the New Testament in many, many places. I will only pick one. I would invite you to. It's a great Sabbath study of when else did Jesus do this on the Sabbath. Turn with me, if you would, to the book of Luke. Luke chapter 13. There's so many to pick from. This one in particular, I think, catches my eye quite often. Luke chapter 13, and amongst all the parables, the parable of the barren fig tree before it. We're going to go to chapter 13, verse 10. Then he moves on after what we're going to read, the parable of the mustard seed, then the parable of the leaven, parable of the leaven. But in chapter 13, verse 10, enmeshed in all these parables of the kingdom of God is a very interesting Sabbath occurrence. Now, he was teaching, Jesus, in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath, and behold, there was a woman who had a spirit of infirmity 18 years and was bent over and could in no way raise herself up. But when Jesus saw her, he called her to him and said to her, "Woman, you are loosed from your infirmity." And he laid his hands on her, and immediately she was made straight and glorified God. 18 years. If any of you have suffered arthritis or another physical debilitating disease or an injury, 18 years is a long, long time. It's longer than, I'm looking around, than some of you have been most of your life, if not all of your life. 18 years is a long time. Woman, you are loosed from your infirmity. Now, that's an interesting phrase, isn't it? Loosed. Loosed. Didn't say healed. He used the word loosed. When you're loosed from something, it means you're bound by it, and now you're free of it. You're free of it. Once bound, now free. Woman, you are loosed from your infirmities. Your infirmity. Verse 14. But the ruler of the synagogue, now this is not just a member of the synagogue, this is not a fellow worshiper in the synagogue, right? Now remember, he's in the synagogue, the ruler. Now, it's not quite the pastor, but that's the general analogy. The pastor comes over, the head guy, and answered with indignation because Jesus healed the wrong person. No, no, because Jesus didn't say the right words. No. Because Jesus didn't heal him. No. Because Jesus has healed on the Sabbath. And he said, notice, not to Jesus, but to the crowd, such a humble, self-effacing man. There are 6 days on which men ought to work. Therefore, come and be healed on them and not, notice the wagging of the finger. I can just see it, can't you? The wagging of the finger. Not on the Sabbath day. Nix, nix on the Sabbath day. This could have been done for 6 days. That's when work ought to be done. He equated healing with work. And that can't be done on the Sabbath. Then the Lord, Jesus answered and said to him, "Hypocrite." Right? Now, it's in the Greek emphatic. There's an exclamation point there. We're not sure. You know, we can guess. We can, again, speculate. I imagine he didn't say, right? "Hypocrite, does not each one of you on the Sabbath loose," there's that word again, "loose his ox or donkey from the stall and lead it away to water? So ought not this woman all the more," this is one of Jesus' minors to maximums, minors to maximums, in other words, one extreme to another. He says, "So ought not this woman, being a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has bound," think of it, 18 years, be, he says it again, "this bond on the Sabbath? Of all days that she should have this done to her, shouldn't it be done on the Sabbath? You are a hypocrite." What's a hypocrite? That's saying one thing and acting another way, doing the exact opposite. It's a problem. He said, so, verse 16, "So not ought this woman, being a daughter of Abraham," in parentheses, "and not a dumb animal," she's not only a woman, this daughter of Abraham, "shouldn't she be loosed on this Sabbath?" Don't you loose your oxen? Don't you loose your cattle? That's a direct reference to the commandment. They loose their animals, in many cases, from doing their work on the Sabbath so they can graze and rest. So don't you keep this commandment for your animals as it is commanded, as it is stated? Shouldn't all the more this woman be loosed on this day among all other days? Verse 17, "And when he said these things, all his adversaries were put to shame, and all the multitude rejoiced for all the glorious things that were done by him." This is an act of physical redemption with great spiritual implications. And Jesus waits for the Sabbath, and he does this over and over and over and over again. The chapter that I can go to are many. I'm going to ask you in your own studies to pick out when Jesus did his healings and what you'll find out, so I don't ruin it for you. What you will find out that indeed Jesus waits for the Sabbath over and over and over again to heal on the Sabbath, to underscore this idea of a redemptive act. Jesus does this because he teaches both in word and in deed on the Sabbath, that this idea that the Sabbath is indeed we are to have physical rest, where we are to rest physically and therefore mentally, but we're also able to understand there's an eternal concept and idea of this day, of redemption. So one of the things that we should dwell on joyfully, happily, is that indeed we have salvation through Jesus Christ and God the Father on this day. Of all days to think of it, this should be the day where our studying, our contemplative reflection is on the Sabbath day. The third aspect is service. And again, we look at Luke in chapter 13 and this concept of Jesus doing this work, so-called, on the Sabbath. Because as with healing, Jesus' example of the Sabbath is important. When Jesus heals, he serves, doesn't he? He serves mankind. He serves mankind and he waits on the Sabbath to do so, again in word and deed. Let me ask you, how can we exemplify this aspect of the Sabbath on the Sabbath? Now, what am I not saying? I'm not saying that we elders are going to wait to heal people on the Sabbath. I think that would be an experiment and failure because we're not Jesus. But the concept and the attitude is still there. And again, I invite you to do your study of Jesus' activities on the Sabbath. The man with the withered hand, right? The man who was struck with demons, he heals on the Sabbath over and over again. How do we exemplify service of the Sabbath on the Sabbath? Well, I'm sure your mind already runs to them. Of all those days that we have some time to rest, where the time we have is not really our own, but we have more command of the time on the Sabbath than we do at any other time of the week. At least I do. I don't have deadlines. I don't have time limits. Obviously, we have to get to church. Those of us that when we prepare a message have time to do that. But by and large, it is a restful and reflective day. Is that not the day that we can at least call, if not visit, those that we know that are sick, those that are infirmed, that cannot attend services or have not attended service? Possibly, would it be wrong on the Sabbath to visit a convalescent home? Would it? Of all days? Of all days? Yes, on the Sabbath, during the week, we can do the same. But on the Sabbath, is this not a responsible thing to do? And so we can also have a heightened awareness. Would it not be the day that we can speak by phone? I mean, God has given us so many forms of communication. Should not the Sabbath be the day that we call not only our loved ones, which is important, but also speak by phone, email, a regular letter, right? Remember, let me explain to the younger people what a letter is. You see, you start with a piece of paper. I'll go really, really slow for you, okay? Because this is a new concept, I know. It looks kind of like this. Paper, right? And we use a pen, that thing with the ink in it. And you write a letter to people. You put it in this little, I was going to bring one, but I thought that'd be a little too pedantic. You put it in like a little pocket. And you fold the paper up and you put a stamp on it. Now have somebody who's older than you explain what a stamp is. And you can mail. You know I'm kidding with you. I don't mean to be demeaning at all. Of course, I talked to my three children, and that was pretty much what the conversation was like. That stuff you get in the mail. No, Dad, those are bills. No, and I know. But you can send letters. I can send bills? No, you're not getting this concept at all. Isn't this the day that we can indeed, by phone, by email, by letter, write a letter or a note of encouragement to those people that we know have not attended for a while because of health or other circumstances, and indeed use the Sabbath as a day of service? There are three areas within this idea of service. Three areas. It is our home. Our home, and those, our family and our loved ones, wherever they may be, wherever they may be. God has given us unbelievable forms of communication to stay in touch with our loved ones. There should be no excuse, should there not, in the 21st century, to say the phrase, when I was young, oh, it's been so long, I haven't written. God has removed so many of those obstacles. Our home is number one. Obviously, number two is our church, right? Those people that we see every Sabbath that we fellowship with, and acts of service on the Sabbath in particular. The Sabbath should be to the church a day of service. Of service. Now, I can't nor will I try and speak for the other elders or speakers, but I think in some cases those of us that speak and have spoken for 10, 15, 20, 30 years, I think sometimes we don't think this is service. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a very, very good thing. Because if we don't believe this is serving, right, and just talking, maybe that will engender us to do more. More service. And so indeed, number two is our church. Excuse me. And number three is our community. Is our community. I'm going to let you determine what you feel within your gates means. Because my gates ain't your gates. And your gates aren't his or her gates. But possibly the Sabbath may give us opportunity on the Sabbath to serve our community. During the week is fine, but I got no time during the week. But I may have a little bit of time I can eke out on the Sabbath. Look for opportunities within the congregation. I always say you can't guinea pig your family because they won't understand. You can't guinea pig the community because they can't understand. But church people will understand what you're trying to do. So look for opportunities, especially in the church. Sabbath is about rest, about our redemption, our salvation, and it is also about our service. Those three things, rest, redemption, and service. Three aspects that tie to both the Old Testament and on into the New Testament. It is about creating or allowing God to create an environment on the Sabbath. Because this day is and should be very, very different. It must be. Often the environment that I create sometimes I feel is not Sabbath-oriented. There's things I do, nothing egregious. I'm not going to see a Laker game on the Sabbath. The tickets are way too expensive. I asked someone today, I said, is it a sin to attend a Laker game if you got the tickets really, really cheap? That was a joke. Please don't put that on if this is being recorded. Take that down. But many times I think we become very mechanical. We become very rote. At least I did. And whereas I didn't do any, I don't think I did. I hope I didn't do anything egregious on the Sabbath. There's some areas where I could have spent a whole lot less time doing things that totally are unrelated and unproductive to the Sabbath. Does that mean we work constantly doing things on the Sabbath? Absolutely not. But the time we are given is only 24 hours. And whereas I don't believe I've wasted 60 to 80,000 hours on Sabbath time, I do know that I could have spent some of that time a lot more beneficially toward me and toward God. So I ask you, how do we spend our Sabbaths? I will not give you a list of do's and don'ts, because there isn't a list of do's and don'ts. There isn't a list of do's and don'ts because my do's and don'ts might be different than yours. It is indicative of you and incumbent upon you to determine how your Sabbaths are spent. For I will not stand before God and explain to him why you kept the Sabbath a certain way. I'll only have to explain how I did. And so I ask you to think on those things. What activities affect our, mine and yours, Sabbath environment? Would we say we read our Bibles more or less than the time we watch TV or read other things? How much do we engage in the world's activities or thinking, and how much on God's? You and you alone have to determine what time is spent doing what. No one will do it for you. No one can. No one should. I, for one, need to reassess Sabbath. So for now, let me do that. Let me wish you a happy, a blessed, a holy, and joyful Sabbath.